You're very welcome to the programme. We might just go straight to a little bit of weather. And the first thing I suppose that we'll have just to let you know is that it will be cloudy tonight with scattered outbreaks of rain or drizzle. There'll be some hill mist and coastal fog as well. Clear spells will develop across the west and southwest a little bit later on. And there will be lowest temperatures tonight, still balmy, 11 to 14 degrees in mostly light and variable breezes. So still seasonal or semi-seasonal. Well, we are at almost, in terms of the arts, at the end of one season and getting ready for the second one, because already the programming is, the publications are coming out letting us know about the programming in our art centres across the Midlands for the autumn. Very excited about that. And we'll be bringing you some information about some of those events over the next little while. But what have we got on the show for you this evening? And a lone poet becomes part of the Poetry Ireland introduction series. It's year two of a portrait project involving older people and a short film winner, making a short film about Quakers. And that is just some of what is to come on the programme tonight. 083 30 10 103 is the Lamb Brothers Midlands 103 text line. I'd love to hear from you if you're out and about and would like to get in touch with us. And of course, at any stage, encore@midlands103.com is the email address. So if you are gearing up for a musical or a stage play, be it a one act or a three act, or you've written your novel and it's just been published, whatever it is that's happening for you, drop me a line and let me know. I would love to hear about what is happening for you in the arts in Laois, Offaly, Westmeath. And sometimes we'll cross the borders just about a little bit. This is, of course, your dedicated arts show every Thursday night between 7 and 8 o'clock. So tonight I will be chatting to Amy Barry. And I have to confess, I actually spoke to Amy early on in the summer, just after she had completed the reading set for her Poetry Ireland Introductions Award, if you'd like to call it that. We chatted about poetry and she read a couple of poems. So I'm going to bring you half of that interview tonight and the other half then at another stage. But wonderful to see an Athlone poet, another one, become part of the Poetry Ireland Introductions series, which is designed to support up and coming writers in the early part of their career. We are 2 years into a 5-year portrait project called Fado Faces, involving older people. Kevin McCann, you might remember, talked to us last year during COVID about a drive-through exhibition that happened in Port Laois. Well, he's here to tell us about how the second part of that project is going and how you can catch up with those particular portraits, 20 of them which have been painted of older people. And I'll be chatting to Dennis McCardle, and he is he's a filmmaker, and he is the winner of the Laois Short Film Bursary, and his film will be about the Quakers in Rosinallis, but not quite about the Quakers who are actually in Rosinallis and who have been in Rosinallis, but a fictionalised telling around that. Thank you for those of you who got in contact about listening a little while ago and how much you enjoyed listening to the interview with Eva Coyle and how much you enjoyed her music. And with that in mind, I'm going to bring you a second song from her tonight. And this one on Midlands 103 is called Round the Garden. And Eva, of course, from Athlone in County Westmeath. That is something else, isn't it? That is Eva Coyle from Athlone, and her new album was released at the start of the summer. It's called Down to the Shore. That is just, she's an extraordinary voice and an extraordinary songwriter as well, isn't she? We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will be talking poetry. But before we do that, I just want to tell you about a message that came in, and I've been asked to remind you that Mount Melick Heritage Society is curating their exhibition for the month of August at the gallery in Mount Melick Library, and that is upstairs there. And the exhibition is about the rich and long history of Mount Melick, its town and environs, and will include an exhibition of Mount Melick embroidery, as well as documents and photographs. And that exhibition continues until the end of this month during library opening hours. So it'll be on tomorrow and until 2 o'clock on Saturday, all day Tuesday and all day Wednesday. And you can pop along to that at the library in Mount Melick. And we still have portraiture and paintings and exhibition, and Indeed, also we'll be talking about filmmaking on the programme this evening, a film about Quakers in Rosenallis. But we are going to stay in Athlone, where we were just before the break, with Eva Coyle, and we're going to hear a poem. This is called At Grandma's, and it is by Amy Barry, and it was published previously in the Sunday Tribune in London, and it is inspired by her grandmother's house on stilts on Penang Island.
At Grandma's. On stilts, a house above the sea. Shoeless, I enter with beetle kisses on both cheeks. Constant sounds of cooking from her kitchen. We gaze out to the horizon, slapped by the low tide stench and the pungent scent of tobacco. Soon we have to move to the land. The government wants to develop this place. She spits hard on the rustic wood of the jetty below her. I, a skinny tomboy, together with my cousins, plunge into jade waters, push cockles from the fishermen's cages, ignoring grandma's screams in the background. We grill our cash on the creaking veranda, dipping them in peanut sauce, sea breeze drying our hair. Next day, time to leave. After a flurry of kisses, she stands framed in the open door, tiny in her floral nonia blouse. Her hair is sunny, big sand, her curls white, tip waves, as she blows cherry smoke with a wiggle air, which drifts back to land.
Drifts back to land, and how atmospheric is that, and how wonderfully does it create a portrait of her grandmother on Penang Island. That is the poet Amy Barry from Athlone. And Amy is one of this year's recipients of the Poetry Ireland Introductions Awards. And there's quite a bit that goes along with that for Amy. It's a project that recognises up-and-coming poets, poets who are at the start of their career. And I spoke to Amy, I think it's as far back as June, just after she had carried out some of the duties and the responsibilities, and had also some of the workshops that arose from her being chosen as one of the introductions poets. And she was telling me all about it.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be selected for this. And thanks to Anthony Anazagoru, actually, he's a London-based award-winning poet himself. He was in charge to select the 10 poets for this year. And we attended this after that. We, on the 6th and 7th May, we were at the DCU campus, where we had a two-day workshop where we learned on form and craft by Anthony. And the next day we were taught on performance workshop by Jessica Trainer. And then after that followed by Anne-Marie Nikurian, where she taught us on, you know, how you maintain your day-to-day practice in writing and how do you prepare your the new collection, things like that. Yeah. And after that, on the 20th, for me, on the 26th May, which is recently on Thursday, I perform readings of four of my poems at the Marin Square, and where there were five of us reading. And the, for the introduction series, they were it started on for 3 days, actually, mm-hmm. at Marin Square. So we were the last readers on the final day. So it was very interesting. We had a huge crowd and they were very supportive. And yeah, it was very interesting actually to be there, you know, to be reading and to have Poetry Ireland organize this. Yes.
So tell me a little bit more about that event on Thursday night and the company that you were in. And I suppose the feedback that you were getting from an audience at an event as auspicious as that.
Yes, we were very delighted. We have a full house, you know, that evening. and the crowd was very, very supportive, and there were a lot of claps, you know. And then we had, in between the reading, we had this a singer called, what's her name now, I think. She was there as well, and, she performed for us. It was very interesting. And then we... all of us were given, a time not to go beyond 10 minutes anyway. So we read a few poems.
What does it mean for you, Amy, to be included in the Poetry Ireland introduction team, so to speak?
Yeah, I'm very proud and honoured to be selected, especially, this is organised by Poetry Ireland. So at least your work has been acknowledged, is this. So you feel very proud. I'm very proud. I feel very proud about this, and then to be able to participate in the workshop that's given, to us, that is really very inspiring for me.
And of all the poets in all the country who aspire to be chosen each year, what do you think brought you to the collection of poets chosen in 2022?
Well, what do I think? Yeah, you see, for the introduction series, these are poets who are emerging, who are in the early stages of their career and who have not had any collection, So at the moment, I am in the midst of revising my poetry collection. So, and you notice that most of the previous alumni introduction series include really good writers like Eleni Hooker, Martin Dyer, Jane Clark, and Stephen Sexton, Stephen Connolly, and they all have many books published, and their writings are very good, So it's nice to be able to follow in their steps, in my writing journey, So, I feel very honored, really, to be in this. And most of these writers have been subsequently been published by, the Irish publishers like Dallas Press, the Gallery Press, the Salmon Poetry, the Coconut mm-hmm. Press, and they've won numerous awards, including those like, for example, let's say the Runa Prize, the Michael Hunnett Award. So, we hope to be, and they have been invited as well to be reading nationally and internationally, from Cork to New York to Belfast to Mumbai to Paris, which are, it's a nice to be, hopeful, to be going along those journeys as well, to be inspired by all these previous alumni intro poets, to be able to really improve on my craft, on my... Mm-hmm. On my writing journey, really.
I was going to ask you about that because I know you're writing your debut collection at the moment. And I am wondering about those workshops that you did with Anthony Anaxagoru and Jessica Traynor and Anne-Marie Caron. Yes. What did you take from those that you can bring to your work for the collection and for your work in general?
Well, like from Anthony Anaxagoru, we participate in the form and craft, you see. So he introduced to us a different kind of form and craft, different style. So it's nice to have this kind of elements to our work, Sometimes when you're writing, you get used to a certain style, but it's nice to have a facilitator like Anthony to tell you, come on now, surprise us, do a different style, do something that's different, So I think it's fun, and it's fun to try other form and craft as well. For me, anyway, And with Jessica Traynor, for example, she, what we did was we gave her a poem, and she immediately gave us back, and then she sort of gave us little notes to say, okay, when you're reading, you pause here, and then there'll be a change of tone in the next line. And then the next line has to be really surprising. And then the next line, slowly ease out kind of thing. So it's nice to be taught, Sometimes, like for me, for example, I've been reading, internationally as well in Paris and Milan, in Puglia, in Turkey, kind of thing. But it's nice as well to have someone to tell you again, to remind you again, you know, that that you're looking at your work, and then you pause here, and then you sort of, you know, your performance has been, it's been taught again, you know. So it's interesting, you know. And then we come to Anne-Marie Nicoulin. She taught us about, I mean, of course, as a writer, you have your own day-to-day practice. But with Anne-Marie, she reintroduced to us, you know, certain things that you have to remember and what to do, you know, before your, you know, when you're doing your collection, you know, what to look for, what would the publisher be looking for, kind of thing. So it is very an eye-opener for us anyway.
It's
very interesting. Yeah.
It has to be. It has to be.
It does certainly sound very interesting, doesn't it? That is the experience that Athlone poet Amy Berry had as a result of being chosen for the Poetry Ireland Introduction Series for 2022. And she also mentioned how wonderful it was to be travelling to Paris and to Milan and to Puglia in Italy as well. That is just the first part of a longer interview that I did with Amy early on this summer, and I will bring you the second half very soon. For now, we are going to move on to visual art with portraits of older people. Well, that Donegal Hooley certainly sounds like a way to dispel the winter blues. Also, just hearing the tag there from Dean Crow Theatre, they have Tommy Tiernan coming to perform at the Dean Crow Theatre as well before Christmas, and I see that Burr Theatre and Arts Centre have a whole month of September where every single Thursday night they have some funny women on the bill, everybody from Deirdre O'Kane to Julie Jay and Marion Keyes and Tara Flynn are in there as well. They're first up. Looks like a terrific lineup, and you'll get all the details there, obviously, on those websites. A little later on the programme, we'll be talking about Quakers and how a film about Quakers is the recipient of this year's Laois Short Film Bursary. But first of all, Kevin McCann. He is an artist, and Fado Faces is a five-year project celebrating older people in art. And we are currently in year two of this project, and the exhibition is underway in the Dunamase Theatre. It opened on the 19th of August and runs till the end of September. Kevin has been reminding me about the project so far. In other words, the first year, which happened last year.
Well, in year one, because of the COVID, we had a drive-by exhibition at County Hall in Port Laois there. And luckily and unluckily, we picked maybe the hottest day of the year last year. It was absolutely fabulous weather. And we had a great turnout of well over 200 people at the drive-by exhibition. The exhibition itself is part of a five-year project. And the first year we'd paint 20 portraits of older people from County Laois or people who live in Laois for the last 10 years. They don't necessarily have to be born and bred in Laois.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, record basic little things about their life story, where they went to school, how they got water growing up as a child, you know, if they got married, if they played football or camogie or something for Laois, or, you know, even any little kind of snippet of information about their life then. And it's really to put a kind of a, put together a kind of a picture, a random picture of people from Laois and what life is like, you know, how they ended up, where they went to school, and how what they ended up doing.
Yeah,
their older age. Yeah, so last year was a really good success, and we're hoping for the same this year with the project. Exhibition will be going ahead now in the Dunamase Arts Centre in Port Laois. I think it's open to the public on the 19th of August.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. So it's more of the same, as I say, a five-year project where we will be painting 20 portraits per year and gathering the 20 stories. And then at the end of 5 years, we hope to put the 100 people into a book. And it'll be kind of like a little social history or a little kind of a small snippet of what life was like, you know. Because as you can imagine, not all the people now, but a good few of the people would have had to walk a few hundred yards for drinking water.
Yeah, of course.
Growing up. And some of them, luckily enough, living in towns, had taps or wells outside the door, the pump well. And yeah, it's just it's the kind of like in, you know, in our own time. It's not going back thousands of years or anything. It's really in a lifetime, just to see the differences of how things have changed.
And how have the people changed in the over the 2 years? How have the stories changed? What's different between this year's cohort and last year's, and this year's portraits and last year's?
There'll be very little difference, because like the people will all be in the same age bracket, like kind of 65 plus. And the portraits, we basically have the cohort, there's 10 artists, so we basically have the cohort of the same artists this year. There's one or two off the top of my head have changed. And the actual format of the portraits are something similar. And the stories, yeah, every story is individual. Like, you know, and some of the people you'd interview for the stories, you couldn't possibly record or write down, because we write the stories, write down every single story they tell you about. There'll be so much. And other people you'd be really kind of asking and asking to find, you know, a nice snippet of information there that you'd be happy with. Yeah, so I'd imagine over the 5 years, I wouldn't see whether there'll be, maybe after the fifth year you might see, but the questions we ask and the information we're looking for, I can't really see there being a difference overall. But what there would be is the difference between each individual, obviously, you know.
Yeah, and their experiences, and you know, how a lack of water might have an impact on one family that might have a different impact on another.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't go too far into it now, but just things like how, say like the distance you'd have to travel for water, or, you know, and what seems to be prevalent is the people out of the towns would have had a well, possibly somewhere local, for either an open well, like, or a pump well for actual drinking water. But they'd have a stream there for washing clothes or cat feeding cattle, watering cattle or whatever the case may be.
Yeah,
and, you know, I'm sure, not that I have kids or anything, but I'm sure if you had kids nowadays and you said to go 200 yards down the water and get me down the road and get me a bucket of water,
they'd say, is there not an app for that?
They probably would, exactly, yeah. Or they'd probably be looking for double the pocket money or something, you know.
Tell me, how has it been working with older people in terms of portraiture? What has been the experience of the artists and the experience of the older people?
The experience of the artist is basically, the interviewing is the piece personally for me, what I would find gathering the story and talking to them, I find very interesting. As for the portrait itself, I would much prefer to do a portrait of a face with character than, like, if you take a brand new baby, there's very little feature marks in the face. So working with older people as regards as a painter, as a portrait artist, yeah, it's really nice and it's more interesting. As for the older people, the work we do nowadays, it's all, I think, and I can speak nearly for all the artists, we work from a photograph. Like, we wouldn't sit someone down for a day or two on end, you know, keeping, where you'd have to keep the light and the pose correct. So that's one of the great things about doing portraiture now. You can take the photograph and work from it. And as for the older people, yes, one or two now people wouldn't see the point. One or two of the sitters I had this year, the people, they were not reluctant, but more kind of quizzical as to why would you want to do this. But the vast majority, I'd have to say, and even last year, were really enthusiastic about the project and about having their story recorded, you know.
And when they see the portraits then?
Well, the majority, from last year's experience, the majority of people were absolutely, you know, in awe or amazed, whatever, or thought they were really good. I know there was one person now where her family said, yeah, of the portrait, they had said the nail to a T, it was the woman, but she didn't see herself in the portrait, or if I'd even say didn't want to see herself.
Okay.
But,
Yeah. So, portraiture is, you know, hard though, isn't it? It's very intimate And it's a way of, you know, when you see yourself painted, you're seeing not yourself, but you're seeing how somebody else sees you, which is a really interesting and challenging thing.
It is. And it's you know, as you say, when you say it's seeing how someone else sees you, it can also be like, I don't know if you've ever done photography, but I would do a lot of it myself. And when you ask someone to take their picture, some people naturally pose, but the majority of people kind of tend to get self-conscious and can pull faces or pull poses that are not natural to them, yeah? And sometimes that's what can come across in the painting. Like, it's like the camera never lies, but yeah, it is a very personal thing. Well, to most people, I suppose, because some people obviously wouldn't mind or, you know, just go along. Yeah, it's a very interesting point that, like, and we found now last year the majority of people that come along were actually impressed with the works. As I say, I only had one person that I heard of who actually was a little bit, well, that doesn't look like me, you know.
Yeah, I had the extraordinary experience a number of years ago of being painted by Nick Miller as part of a project at the Art House Gallery in Stradbally. And it was really interesting, really interesting. To be sitting there, and I know you say it's not, you're working from photographs, but to be sitting there with somebody looking at you for something that they can find in you to hold on to tell a story of what they see. It's really, it's incredible.
Well, it is. I mean, and I don't know, I'd be talking to people like, and I can, I've been, touch wood here, I'm kind of fairly lucky now myself, since I started doing portraits, they're usually like spot on, you know, there's no mistake in the person. And but it can drift on you. If you take your eye off the ball at all, it can drift and it can be very hard to get it back. So you could be telling stories there that you're not even intending to tell in your portrait, you know.
I doubt very much that Kevin McCann ever takes his eye off the ball or that he ever tells a story in a portrait that he doesn't intend to tell. But there you go. That exhibition, Fado Faces, will run from now until the end of September. And it is supported by Creative Ireland Leash as part of the Creative Ireland Programme Creativity and Older Age Fund and also in partnership with Leash County Council. We're going to stay in Leash after the break for a film about Quakers. A film about Quakers is the recipient of this year's Leash Short Film Bursary. Dennis McArdle is a filmmaker, and that encompasses writer, producer, researcher, you get the drift. And he will be making the film called The Light Within. And he's been telling me about where he got his interest, first of all, in the Quakers of Leash.
Well, I was researching for another documentary, some Quaker history and heritage around Kildare and Leash and Offaly and so on, about 4 or 5 years back. And it was just very simple secondary research and then a little bit of primary research, interviewing a couple of people. Mostly it was reading books and so forth, and documentation and social diaries. And so that's where it sort of came from. And then through that, the idea of creating and fashioning a story sort of emerged slowly over time. That's the way this seemed to work with me, Claire, you know. So I was working on another documentary idea, and then I had an idea for something myself, and that's how it sort of emerged, you know.
The title of the short film that is the winner of the Leash Short Film Bursary for 2022 is The Light Within.
Yes. Now, The Light Within really refers to part of the religious heritage of Quakers. They use that term as a sense of communion with Christ, and that's very much what their religiosity is about. It's a very simple, direct communion with Christ. There is no intercession. There is no hierarchy. There's no patriarchy. There's no priests or bishops or popes or anything like that. So it's just basically you and God, you know. And so they use that term as sort of, you know, the light of God within you. So I thought it was an appropriate title for the film that I had fashioned.
So how does that tie in with the story that you're telling in the film?
Well, this is a story with a sort of a slight supernatural backdrop. And in this story, the Quakers represent, I suppose, a certain rationality. And then there's another aspect of the story which is involved with indigenous superstition and the pishogues of Irish folklore. Now, Quakers wouldn't have had very much truck with indigenous folklore or with any other sense of spirituality, and that, as I say, their religiosity was very simple, and it was a direct communion with Christ. So they didn't believe in the fairies. They didn't believe in Irish folklore. They didn't really believe in any other aspects of, you know, superstition. They had really no interest in holy wells or, you know, what, and that kind of agency, you know. So their spirituality is very much about the light within. And this story is a sort of a conflict between those two dynamics. It's the Quaker religion and culture representing a certain rationality in the way I've expressed it. And then it's in conflict or in drama with the local superstitions. And it's where those two aspects meet. That's where the drama is sort of expressed, you know.
And are you telling this story through, you know, some of the very well-known Quaker families, the Edmondsons, the Shackletons, the Pyms?
No. It's not. I mean, like, I'm aware of all those names, and I'm aware of where they're from and their provenance. But this is very much a fiction.
Okay.
It part of this actually comes out through a friend of mine, James Mortel, and James occasionally gives me work to read, and he had fashioned something himself. So I used this, along with my own research, I fashioned this partly from what he had written. So that's kind of, I suppose, where it sort of all sprang from. But although the story is set in Rosen Alice, which had a very strong Quaker presence, and all around the area of Mount Mellick, you know, and all that area, but it's not based on any real family. It's just a fiction that I created, or, you know, that we created ourselves, you know.
Okay, so can you tell us at this stage a little bit about the plot, or how that's going to develop, or how you've cast it?
I don't want to say too much.
Of course,
it's essentially a family drama. And one of the things I wanted to do, Claire, was to explore a female-centric story. And I had never really done a story with women or with sisters. So this is about two teenage sisters and their Quaker father. And as I say, they sort of represent the rational mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come across the other sort of aspect of Irish indigenous superstition.
Okay.
And so, like, that's kind of woven into it a little bit. So there's a sort of a supernatural backdrop to it. But I'm hesitant to use the word horror or any of all of those kind of tropes, you know, because I do see this sort of essentially as a family drama. It's how they, as a family, respond to the people around them, you know, because Quakers essentially were planters. You know, they came over from England in, you know, the late 16th, early 17th century.
So this is when we're setting your story, the story.
Yes, it's set in 1780. And the reason for that, partly for that timeline is that, and that date, is that I wanted to set something before the famine, before the Act of Union, and before all the rebellions, so that there's no real sense of
nationalism, you know, or any of that politics.
Like there's no real political drama to it. Look, it's a short film, so there's not much you can do. And although, you know, places like Ballitore were affected by the United Irishmen and 1798 and all that, But it wasn't, this was something I didn't want to focus on. This is really sort of focusing on a very simple family drama, on a simple family dynamic. So I set it around that time too. And also, I suppose, because usually Irish history films are usually kind of very much 19th century, and I wanted to go a little bit earlier, even just in terms of dress and in terms of propping and the art direction and how we're going to, and the huge challenge we have against, you know, ahead of us in terms of, you know, period detail, getting that correct, the correct lamp lights and lanterns and so on that they would use, you know.
Well, you've lots, you'll know that you have the... They did all the Jane Shackleton photographs that are available
correct.
There. I think Christian Cornell, I think, has quite a lot of those images that should be of some assistance to you.
I'm aware of them. Yeah, I mean, I've been there. I know that there's a museum in Mount Mellick, and there's also a museum in Ballitore itself, in County Kildare. But so I mean, those, as I say, this was all part of creating a world. We're looking to create a world here that the audience will kind of fall into, you know. So it'll be horse and carriage and, you know, dirt roads and obviously no sense of modernity, but just in terms of the dress, of how they hold themselves, their poise, right down to their, you know, to their utensils and the plates and cups and all that, you know.
You have you clearly have a very strong vision for how you'd like it to look. What's the timeline for it now?
The timeline is it's not that long away. That he quaking in his boots. we're casting in September. We're sort of working on the locations at the moment and the crewing and so on. We're aiming to shoot at some point in October, late October. We don't exactly have dates nailed down yet, but it's around that time. We're delivering for Christmas. So that's, we'll basically be shooting around mid-late October, and then we'll be in the post-production process thereafter until the end of the year.
Okay.
So I suppose sometime next year in the spring, it'll be available to view or whatever. I know that we have to have a showing with Creative Leash and Leash County Council, that they'll have some kind of a showing, screening. But that's more or less like the timeline. So basically we're sort of working, you know, hell bent for leather between now and Christmas.
Well,
we've got a very good producer on board, David Butler, a lovely fella, and we're working hard on this together, you know, to bring it. He's very resourceful, you know, to bring it to the screen.
And the film is called The Light Within. It is the winner of the Leash Short Film Bursary. And of course, the project is supported by Creative Ireland Leash as part of the Creative Ireland programme and is in partnership with Leash County Council. And Dennis wanted to say thanks to all of those organisations, to Mairne Ní Conaill, the Leash Arts Officer, and also to Arthur Lappin, and indeed to everybody who was involved. And that, this evening, is all there is from Encore. And remember, encore@midlands103.com is the email address if you want to get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. The great Joe Cooney is in the building. He will be here after the news at 8 with the best of Irish and American music. I will be back next Thursday with Encore just before the picnic. And if you can't wait till then, Tom Mixtape Nua or Shul Majin de Saharn, Idra Shacht Agus Ahoch the Clug, the best tunes on the radio anywhere between 7 and 8 every Saturday morning with me and my Cúpla Focal. And we'll be starting with some roses for the weekend. That is in it. Till then, take care of yourself. Good night.